Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Liberty and the Law, the podcast series that examines the critical elements of a strong legal defense in criminal cases. Join respected attorney James Doerr for this lively discussion on the rights of criminal defendants and the important role defense attorneys play in our legal system.
You know, one of the very interesting things about doing this podcast series for really a couple of years now is that as I have my discussions with attorney James Doerr, he will often reference certain cases that have become sort of landmark cases in the judicial system. And we may be familiar with them, but we've never taken the time to really talk about them in detail. And I think we're going to start down that path today. Hi, everybody. This is Jim Mitchell. And in an effort to help all of our listeners and potentially some young attorneys or law students, we are going to set aside some time over the next few podcasts to talk a little bit about some of these very important cases that have shaped the judicial system for a number of years. And today it's Miranda versus Arizona. And Jim, boy, I know that this is one we drop in conversations all the time, but never talked about it in detail. So I think this is going to be kind of a fun conversation today.
I agree, Jim. I think it's a good idea. You know, always getting back to basics. And once in a while, you have to do that as a lawyer to familiarize yourself once again with, you know, landmark decisions. It's always a good idea to go back to basics. So, yeah, I think this is a good idea, Jim. Let's get started.
So you and I talked about the Miranda case as we were planning for this, and, you know, we both referenced the fact that it's, you hear about it on TV and, you know, movies and things. You often hear about these rights being read, but where did this all begin? What are the origins of what we know as the Miranda rights?
Well, the origins come, as one would guess, from a decision carrying that name. So Miranda versus Arizona was one of four cases that the Supreme Court consolidated in one decision. And they had a kind of an umbrella that they consolidated these cases under, like a common theme. And from that case, it was eventually, you know, came to what we are known as the Miranda rights, the rights that are commonly read. Again, we hear it on TV all the time. But as you might guess, when Hollywood gets a hold of the Supreme Court decisions, they get it a little wrong. But that's okay. We can get into that and what's expected and what's required from the decision.
Yeah, it's really a couple of things to talk about there. First of all, you know, what specifically should be said and when it should be said and what the implication of that is. So do you know that particular wording of the rights that should be read to a defendant?
Well, the thing is that the court doesn't really say you have to read these rights. They don't necessarily put it in a format where the police would have the card they read, or the, you know, when you're at a police station, they normally have a pre-printed, you know, rights where a defendant would acknowledge they've been read each right, they still initial and sign at the bottom, that sort of thing. That wasn't what the Supreme Court had in mind, but they said it, you know, they set some minimums that must be present, right? Because they put the burden on the prosecutors that they have to prove that these statements are voluntarily given, that they're freely, voluntarily, there's no coercion involved. So there's burdens put on the prosecutors when they want to seek to admit confessions or statements. And I got let me read the exact quote here.
Okay, yeah.
A defendant must be warned prior to any questioning that he has a right to remain silent, that anything he says can be used against him in a court of law, that he has a right to presence of an attorney, and if he cannot afford an attorney, one will appoint it to him prior to questioning if he so desires. You know, that's kind of a summary of the paragraph in the decision saying what's required.
Yeah, that's a lot of what we are familiar with from those media-type exposures we've had. You and I often talk about the process when someone is stopped for being suspected of committing a crime or being accused of committing a crime. Is there a particular time in the sequence that this dialogue should take place, that these rights should be read at a particular time before anything else happens?
Right. The timing comes down to what the Supreme Court determined is what's called custodial interrogation. So it's not immediately upon arrest. Like We love the cop shows, right? Your T.J. Hooker moment where they get the chance to go, all right, you scumbag, you got a right to remain silent, right? You know, they say you have a right to an attorney, and you better get a good one because you're guilty, right? They love these Hollywood moments, but it's not upon arrest, all right? I think what happened in response, you know, the police departments, you know, there was a lot of confessions that were getting tossed out because of this decision. And so, police departments and prosecutors had to get together some kind of method where they were ensuring these rights. So that's, I think, the safest way to do it for them would be, we read the rights as soon as he was arrested. Then we read them again before we tried to get a statement out of him, before he asked any questions, right? I think that was like the safe response to what the decision was. Because, you know, let's face it, a lot of criminal cases are solved with confessions. Prosecutors need this. Police need to close their files with these statements. And we have to protect people's rights against self-incrimination. So that's really what it comes back to, is protecting that right.
Now, I want to circle back to a real interesting point you made at the beginning here when you mentioned that this was a consolidation of multiple cases. This was back in 1966, and it was Miranda versus Arizona, but also Venera versus New York, Westover versus United States, and California versus Stewart. First of all, is this something that the Supreme Court does? Do they see different cases coming and say, we'll hear these all at once, or do the individual attorneys and plaintiffs get together and say, hey, how about if we get together and sort of present one case? What's the process there?
The Supreme Court controls its own docket, so they will grant certiorari, which is the review of decisions. They control their own docket. Now, if there's if there's competing districts that have different decisions, right? One decision goes one way, one goes another. The Supreme Court would like to a lot of times take those up so they can get one standard decision across the federal districts. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many reasons the Supreme Court could use to consolidate. Now, in this one, I got the exact statement, and again, I went back all the way to my college textbook again, right? Cases in Constitutional Law, second edition by F. Cushman, right? 1989. And his exact statement by the court is, this is why they consolidated the four cases. And it goes, incommunicado interrogation of individuals in a police-dominated atmosphere, right? That's key, resulting in self-incriminating statements without full warnings of constitutional rights. So what do they have in common? Interrogation of suspects, police-dominated atmosphere, big part of that. There's many ways in cases that have come down since Miranda implementing these procedures. So what's police-dominated atmosphere? Again, it comes down to power, right? They're trying to control the power in these things. Self-incriminating statements, that's protecting your Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. And again, they want full warnings of constitutional rights. So that's what the elements of these four cases had all in common.
And now it's interesting because you mentioned the constitutional rights, or the court mentioned constitutional rights. I believe, as you just said, it's Fifth Amendment. How did the courts interpret the Fifth Amendment in this particular case, and what are they trying to protect by requiring the reading of these rights?
All right. Well, they're trying to give some real meat, some real teeth to the amendment, to the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Now, that could be, you're on a stand, right? You don't, in a criminal case, you don't have to take the stand to testify. You can't be compelled to take the stand. This is going back to, a lot of English common law and the Star Chamber, right, where individuals would be brought in, and really without a prosecution making a case, judges, magistrates would interrogate a suspect on the stand and find out whatever they could and decide, okay, what crime fits this. So it was really, there was no protections for an individual. You had the system, all the power of government, different branches there, coming down on that individual with absolutely, really no realistic chance to prevail in a system like that. So out of those protections, right, the court determined that we're not just protecting somebody in a courtroom scenario. To fully give protections against self-incrimination, we have to protect during, the police, investigation part of a criminal trial, a criminal matter. So they're extending that as a meaningful protection of your right against self-incrimination to that police-dominated atmosphere, okay? You're alone. you're separated from your family, separated from your friends. You don't have an attorney, and you're being questioned, interrogated by professional interrogators. These are police that have been trained and educated in various forms of questioning and how to get it. You know, you don't have to beat somebody. There's other ways of using persuasion and anything that manipulating psychology to get people to talk. So the court was trying to add some protection to that level, you know, of early on in the investigation of a criminal matter.
We're really enjoying the conversation with Attorney James Doerr today. I always like to share the fact that you can learn more about him at lavellelaw.com. Look under criminal defense or look him up in the list of attorneys there, 847-705-7555 to reach James and get some more information about particular issues regarding criminal defense. And so you went back to your 1989 college textbook there. I know we've talked about this. Tell me about your use of Miranda when you deal with clients. You've always talked about a process you follow when you begin a defense claim. How does this factor into the work you do on a routine?
Well, coming down to the reliability and voluntariness of confessions, okay? So in my practice, I could challenge a statement in a pretrial scenario. I would file a motion to suppress statements, okay, where I would be alleging that there was some sort of constitutional violation in how my client's statement was given, okay, how that was obtained. That would be a pretrial motion. There'd be a hearing in court where a judge would determine, after listening to the witnesses, I would call mine. The prosecution would have a chance to call their own witnesses. And if it was deemed not to be voluntary, it would be stricken so the prosecution could not use that statement in their case in chief, right? But again, that would be a pretrial scenario. It also could come out in trials where on its own the state does have to prove the voluntariness of these statements as part of introducing them in the court of law, okay? But in the practice, you know, our little practice tip, we're always looking at these statements. You know, if there was one given in a police station, well, we're going to look at, well, what led up to that statement? You know, was there something done before warnings were given? You know, was there, you know, any sort of, you know, request by my client for an attorney or to remain silent or anything like that? Because, you know, once somebody in custody wants to remain silent, or once they ask for an attorney, they can't be questioned any longer until that attorney's provided, right? And once somebody has to remain silent, I wish to remain silent, they can't keep bothering that person, you know, like come back 5 minutes later. Are you sure you don't want to talk now? And 10 minutes later, how about now, right? You can't do that. So the state, either through its prosecutors or more importantly through its police agents, have to respect a suspect's right to an attorney and right to remain silent. And that's really where Miranda put both of those together in this decision. A previous decision in Gideon versus Wainwright, where the court had determined about indigent people having access to attorneys and court-appointed attorneys, and then here in this scenario, the Fifth Amendment protections against self-incrimination. So the court, the Warren Court, in this decision in 1966, kind of wrapped them up in one decision, and that was their attempt to stem the practice of improper police techniques regarding to confessions and whatnot.
I'll give you just a quick 30 seconds here before we go. Jim, just the importance of this particular case for, as I mentioned, law school students, young attorneys, how important is it to understand some of these landmark cases and use them as part of your knowledge base?
Now, for the student, they're going to have to know this, because you're not going to pass your coursework and you're not going to pass the bar exam unless you know certain things about this. But, you know, I keep going back to my old materials. I saved, you know, this is my college textbook. This wasn't even a law school textbook. And some of my notes are still relevant on these pages these days. So, you know, get back to basics once in a while. Research these cases. There's a reasoner there, and use them in your practice. You have to, constantly screen your cases for, you know, opportunities like this to aid your client.
Well, James Doerr, thanks so much for being with us again, Lavelle Law, to find out more about him. And we look forward to upcoming conversations as we dig a little bit deeper here on Liberty and the Law. Thanks, everyone, for listening.